Thanks. It was nice to be here. So I'm going to get into the epidemiology of MRSA in food animals and me talking about the Canadian experience, but I'll have to give a little bit of background. We don't have time to get into the general overview of MRSA in animals. But basically what's happened with MRSA, we've seen multiple waves of MRSA. It's a huge human pathogen, an important cause of disease in people in hospitals, and a big cause of disease in people in the community without relationship with the hospitals. And it's moved in certain waves. There was the first wave of MRSA just emerging in hospitals back in the 1960s. There were then subsequent waves of changes in the types of MRSA that were found, but still confined largely to hospitals. Around the 1990s, the new shift happened with the emergence of primary community onset disease, disease in people without links to the healthcare system, without comorbidities, other risk factors typically assumed with MRSA. And then some other changes, the emergence of more resistance, such as vancomycin resistance. And maybe the latest wave is the emergence of MRSA in animals. And this has come in a couple different ways. We've got the human influence on animals, as we're seeing with companion animals, dogs, cats, horses. We've got humans moving MRSA into the pet population. But then we've got the livestock issue, where we really truly do have, it seems, a self-propagating reservoir of MRSA and potential implications on humans. So my disclosures, I don't have any significant funding disclosures. These are some funding sources I have had through the animal industry, just to declare that before we get into the animal side. So a lot of the concern, or really most of the concern with MRSA in animals, originated from the Netherlands. And this is a country that has very, very tight MRSA control, very, very low MRSA rates, and the ability really in the past to document where MRSA infections came from. So the first problems were identified when there were unexpected MRSA infections. So infections that didn't have a link to hospital, didn't have a link to foreign travel. And it was unexpected colonization in a single case, a child whose parents were also colonized. This raised a bit of concern. Then later, there were diagnoses of MRSA infection in a pig farmer, and then a separate case, the son of a pig veterinarian. All unrelated, all without risk factors, all unexplained and unexpected, and all having this pig link. They then went to a regional meeting looking at pig farmers and found out that 23% of pig farmers had MRSA growing in their nose. Now, a small percentage of the healthy population can carry MRSA in their nose. In the Netherlands, much less than 1% of people would be expected to be carrying MRSA, probably less than 0.1% at that time. This is an astounding rate and really freaked them out. When you think about how they were able to control it, how they knew what was going on, then all of a sudden this really unexplained reservoir of MRSA. And one thing that was quite unique here in all these cases was one strain, sequence type 398, and was also found in a pig. This is a unique strain. It was very, very rare in people before, and subsequently we now know the susceptible version has been present in pigs for a while. So this is truly probably a food animal origin strain, a resident Staphylococcus aureus that's picked up resistance and is now causing problems. And this strain is now causing a lot of problems in Europe. So now the question is, what's happening in Europe and how does that reflect in North America and other countries? But this is commonly found in pigs in various countries in Europe and in other areas, and sometimes very high prevalence. And the concerning part from the public health standpoint is the massive increase in infections now caused by ST398 in countries in Europe, especially some of these low prevalence, low incidence countries overall, and very strong association of animal contact with carrying and with being infected with this strain. And animal-associated infections are now the most common origin of community onset MRSA in the Netherlands. And it's to the degree now, if you're a pig farmer or have pig contact and you go into hospital in some countries, you're considered infectious until proven otherwise. You're considered an MRSA carrier, you're isolated, you're tested until you're found to be negative. So that's the quickie version of the background of MRSA. I think we have to set the scene a little bit. Now I'm going to backtrack a little bit and what we found in Canada, and that can relate to what's going on in the US. So our first study was back a few years ago before we'd found MRSA in an animal in North America. And we looked at a farm, a convenient sample of a set of farms in Ontario, and we found quite remarkable rates. 45% of farms had MRSA in pigs. 30% pig prevalence, and this was among three different groups. This is amongst the piglets, the weaners, and the grower finishers, and reasonably high prevalences amongst all those groups. And on some farms, all the 15 pigs that we sampled were positive. It wasn't really quite all or nothing, but if we found MRSA on a farm, we tended to find a lot of it on a farm, which maybe isn't surprising when you consider the mixing and the infection pressure that could happen. The concerning part, when we looked at farmers, 20% of pig farmers had MRSA in their nose. And in Canada, we would expect about 2% or so of the general population to be carrying MRSA. So that's pretty high. We didn't have a control group, but I think we can say that's pretty high. And whenever we found MRSA in a pig farmer, it was the same strain as we had in pigs on the farm. Doesn't mean which way it's going, but it means there's probably interspecies transmission there. And we did find that sequence type 398 strain, that European pig food animal associated strain, accounted for 74%. But there's an interesting flip side here. This is whether this is a North American thing or not. 14% of isolates we found in pigs were USA 100. This is a very common human epidemic clone, the most common clone causing infections in human hospitals in the US and in Canada, and also the most common strain found in colonized people. So presumably we've got a situation where we've got this ST398 in pigs. How it got here, we don't know. Going pigs to human, but we've also had human MRSA move into the pig population. Just a great example of this one medicine concept. The little piggy diagram here, this means where we found it. So 65% of pigs, we found it predominantly in the nose or only in the nose, 30% nose and rectum, 5% rectum only, which has some implications for how we screen in further studies and why we rely on the nasal sample now for further studies. So that led into the question, okay, what really happens over time to piglets? What are the factors that might be associated with changing colonization rates? With the long-term goals, how do we intervene? So this was a longitudinal study in a 500 sow farrow to finish farm. It was an antibiotic-free farm, and none of the pigs in this study had any antibiotic exposure throughout. So we took 10 sows, tested them before farrowing for MRSA, and then we got the piglets and we swabbed them regularly over the first 70 days of life. Three of those 10 pigs were positive, only on one of the three samples, though, that we took before, and they were all this sequence type 398 strain. But all the sows were negative by the time they farrowed. And MRSA was very common in this group. So 79% of piglets overall had at least one positive sample. And individual sampling times, up to 65% of pigs were positive. So it started off very low, and I'll show that in a later slide, but it went up quite high. More commonly post-weaning, but not necessarily just the impact of weaning causing the increase. And we look at, so 79% were positive, but of the 21 pigs that were negative throughout the whole study, 43% of them died before weaning. So really, if a pig made it through post-weaning towards the end of the study, very, very high rates of colonization. Another interesting thing was 22% of piglets had one or more negative samples between a positive sample, so the positive, negative, positive. And we don't really know what that means. Does that mean we just missed it because they're hard to swab and we had a false negative, or we had a lab issue? Or does that mean they're periodically infected, clear it, get reinfected? Or does it mean they're contaminated and not necessarily colonized? Think about how an animal moves around, explores the nose, very easily could be contamination versus colonization, which is a dynamic that we don't really understand at all. Now, not surprisingly, if the sow was positive before farrowing, the piglets were more likely to be positive. But if you look at the numbers here, and only three out of those 10 sows were positive, it indicates the sow may have a factor, but certainly isn't the sole factor. And focusing just on the parents is not going to be a way to control MRSA completely. So this is the MRSA colonization rate. So this is prevalence on this axis. So you see, it started off fairly low and a pretty good increase. So this bar here is the time of weaning, which was somewhat variable in this group. So we had a pretty big spike around the time of weaning, but it was increasing before then. So changes at weaning, stress, mixing, everything else that could happen at that time certainly could have an impact, and maybe that's why we saw a bigger peak here. But we did have a pretty reasonable increase starting before the time of weaning. So really what that means is we don't know. We don't know what the dynamics are. We don't know what causes changes in MRSA prevalence. There was no antibiotic exposure here to account for anything at the time of weaning. But there are significant age effects that we need to explore and maybe take advantage of in control. So some of the questions, what's colonization versus contamination? What does a positive result really mean? We don't know. What are the sources of infection? Sow, obviously, is a possible source. The environment, obviously a possible source. People, a positive source through contaminated hands or through true colonized states. They've got it in their nose, they touch the nose with their hands, and they handle a piglet. Why is that age effect there? Not antibiotics in this situation, but certainly could be in other farms. Is it normal microflora of the nose? Is it a normal immune response? Is there something we can take advantage of there? And obviously we can have a high prevalence on antibiotic-free farms. So this led to another study looking at different age groups. So we had fairly high rates in multiple age groups earlier on, but if we start getting concerned about MRSA in pigs and the ultimate issue being pork, then we're more worried about the pigs that are going towards the pork, not necessarily a piglet. What's happening in a piglet doesn't necessarily correlate to what's happening in a pork chop versus what's happening to an animal that's right before slaughter probably has greater relevance. So this is a study we're just finishing off right now. It's 500 pigs from 50 herds across Canada, 10 animals per pig, non-commingled, independent samples per farm, getting nasal swabs. And these ones were taken right before the age of slaughter, so more representative of what's going into the food chain. And the results have been actually quite startling to me. Only 2 out of 35 farms that we found any MRSA, and only 9 pigs overall. So 2.6% of pigs on 5.7% of farms. Much lower than I thought, but maybe it makes sense with that age dynamic. We do know with other organisms, age prevalence rates can decline fairly dramatically over time. With the 2 farms that were positive, probably not surprising to a certain degree. One farm had that sequence type 3NET8, this piggy food animal associated strain. And one farm had 2 different strains, both human epidemic clones. The CMRSA2 or USA100, sorry, I put the Canadian nomenclature there, predominant human clone. The other one, CMRSA5 or USA500, another predominant human clone that's also a horse adapted clone. So 2 different strains, 2 different potentially human origin strains on this farm. So, yeah, it's much less common than expected, but what does that mean? Does it mean it's not very common in Canada? Does it mean our study initially in Ontario was an aberrant group? Does it mean the age is really the factor there? We don't really know, but I think we need to start focusing a little bit more on risk factors in different groups. Interesting, this was the first report of this USA 500 clone in pigs, which I'll come back to in a minute, which raises the obvious question, though. It's still there. It may not be very common, but it's still there, and if it's in pigs, where is it going to go down the line? Is it in food? And we know that from various studies. And I'm going to go through a couple of our studies here fairly quickly. This is our first one looking at retail pork sampled with a national surveillance system in about a year ago now, I guess. And we found MRSA in 7.7% of retail samples, pork chops, ground pork, and pork shoulders. No significant difference between those groups. So fairly common, actually higher than we were finding in the pigs going into that, if we think that the prevalence is the same between those time periods. Typing is when it gets a bit weird. So we sequence type 398, 32%. I think we'd expect to see that. This is the food animal associated strain. USA 100, fairly common there. Okay, it's higher than we saw in the earlier study. It's maybe not quite proportionate to what we've seen in pigs. But then this USA 500, which we've only found in one pig, and we only found it in one pig recently, and it was the most common. So it raises a lot of questions, is where does it come from? Is it coming from the animals? Is it coming from the environment? Are certain strains better adapted at surviving in a slaughterhouse or in the processing environment? Is MRSA in a pork chop coming from the pig's nose or the person handling the meat's nose? I think that's a certain area we need to pay a lot of attention to, and we're trying to figure out how to control it, because if it's happening later on in retail handling, then interventions on the farm might not be as important. If it's all farm-based, then we need to pay attention there. So why was CMRSA5 so common? No clue is my honest answer on that. And why is it more common in meat than in pigs? And saying more common, it was for different studies, different prevalences, but it was fairly common in meat compared to the pigs there. Now, round 2 of meat sampling broadened what types of products we were looking at. Again, sampled nationally through a surveillance program, single sample per retail outlet to avoid clustering and the like. And similar overall for pork, 9, 6.3, 13.6, although the 13.6% in pork chops being twice as high as ground pork is a bit counterintuitive to me. You think a ground product would have a higher chance of contamination than a piece of meat. It's again raises questions, okay, is there more person contact with pork chop preparation and handling? And I don't know that much about meat handling processes, but that's something that comes to mind with me. 5.6% of ground beef, relatively common there. And remember that number down the road a little bit. And just one positive out of 238 chicken samples. And what was weird here is these were all USA 100. These were a few different types of USA 100, different subtypes of USA 100, but they were all this human epidemic clone, this common human strain that's most common in the nose of people. And why was that the case? Why are we seeing the same strain between species? Why are we not seeing sequence type 398? We don't think it's a lab contamination issue. We had multiple other studies going on, and we're finding all kinds of different strains, and we're just finding this strain in this study that was intermixed with them. So it again, we almost raise more questions with these studies than we answer. But it's present. It's present in multiple products. We've got strains that are definitely of relevance to humans. It doesn't really matter where they came from if there is a relevance to it down the road. So where did SD398 go? Why the different distributions in meat and animals? And then again, the sources of contamination that I mentioned a few minutes ago that we need to consider if we're going to try to control this. So with that previous one, we found MRSA in 5.6% of ground beef. So logically, we'd expect to find it in cattle. It's been reported in some small studies of mastitis, or small numbers in studies of mastitis internationally. It's been found in veal calves in Europe. So we did a study looking at cattle arriving on feedlots in Western Canada, getting nasal swabs and fecal samples, and we haven't found it. Almost 500 animals we've tested so far, and we cannot find MRSA in them yet. And we can't find it in 500 animals. We can find it in 5.6% of ground beef. That seems a little bizarre to me. These are feedlot animals, so they're the ones that are going into the food chain. Is there a potential regional effect? I'd be surprised. This is our kind of predominant meat-producing region. So again, raises another question, is where does this come from? And is there something that happens later on? They become colonized. Is there another source? Is this an aberrant effect of just sampling? Where does MRSA beef come from? Don't really know. Means we need to look a lot harder, obviously. But one of the big questions is, okay, so we've got ST390 being a huge problem in Europe, the animals being the main source of these community onset infections in some countries, huge risk factors of people that have animal contact. What's going on in Canada? And really, Canada and the U.S. have a similar thing. And really, not a lot that we know of is going on, which raises a lot of questions. Okay, we've got big problems with ST390 in Europe. We've got not much that we know of here. Are we truly immune for some reason? Do we have different clones? We've got the USA300 clone in the community as a major problem, which really hasn't established a foothold there. Is there some reason that we've got certain strains here that aren't letting ST390 move in? Is it we're 5 years behind them in the epidemiology? And I think that's the concern. Did it start there? Did we get it here somehow? And where they were 5 years ago? We're just starting to see the onset of these community cases. So we aren't seeing a lot of ST390 infections in people, but I wouldn't be comfortable saying it's not going to be an issue until quite a few years down the road when we've given it a chance to build up. We don't live in close proximity to farms as we do in some of these densely populated European countries, so it may take longer. But I don't think we can ignore it. But at this point, we don't have a whole lot going on. With our Canadian nosocomial infection surveillance program, two ST398s in 2003, five out of 2,300 and some isolates in 2007, 2008, those all being from rural regions of Saskatchewan. Now, one of the weaknesses, though, in the surveillance for MRSA is focusing on hospital-associated infections and invasive infections. And if this is a primary community-onset disease, if someone comes in with an abscess, soft tissue infections, less likely they're going to get cultured, and it's very unlikely they're going to get typed. So if this is actually causing a lot of community-onset infections, it's very possible we'd be missing it with the surveillance programs that are in place now, which means more intensive surveillance is needed for primary community-onset infections, the milder infections, especially focused on food-rearing, animal-dense regions to get an idea of whether we have a problem that's brewing or whether we do have a low rate that's not going to be a problem down the road. So I think we still have a lot of questions. Why has MRSA emerged? This may be a bit of a more esoteric question. It's relevant academically. But what's driving it? Is it antimicrobial use? Is it production system? Is it the impact of MRSA in people and us infecting animals? And that's the companion animal side. I don't think that's the food animal side. But we need to figure out what's going on. Because if we don't know why it's happened, why it's happening, we can't figure out how to control it and prevent it from increasing. What's the human health relevance? And again, we don't know that in North America. Certainly there are major issues in Europe. But what is the relevance of direct contact for people in contact with food animals, producers, veterinarians, and the like, people in contact with animals in educational exhibits, agricultural fairs, indirect contact. So the secondary stepping out, environmental contamination and food, all things that I think are worthy of consideration. Why is it rare in humans with sequence type 390 at this point? Is it in different epidemiology versus later emergence? I mean, that's one of the more important questions that we need to be paying attention to. And to keep it short, we have a lot of time for questions at the end, but I guess I'll leave it at that and we'll move on.